Memcast Studio production.
Doing it. All right, welcome to episode number 27 of Riding the Pine. I am Hondo here with Stat God. What's up, Stat God?
Hey, Hondo, what's going on, man?
Hey, so we're just two today, but we're going strong. There's some good ball going on this week, so you know, we have a little bit to talk about, but I think it'll be a little bit shorter episode for our listeners tonight. Today, whenever, I don't know, internet time just freaks me out. So
that's a beautiful thing about podcasting. They do whatever they want to.
So this is episode 27. So 27 is Rudy Gobert, Jamal Murray, Zaza Pachulia, Yusuf Nurkic. I probably got that wrong. I apologize, Guy. Jordan Crawford and Jordan Hill. And should we just throw on another Jordan just to make sure? I don't know. There's got to be somebody else.
There must have been one at some point. If you're a Jordan, you wear number 27. Shout out to us. You know the Twitter handle.
We're just going to get Jordans throughout high school. Jordans throughout high school ball just coming back
we'll
out.
We'll get to it us. In Arizona Mission. So.
All right. So as a new clip on this this episode, give me your favorite story of the week.
Shit, I wasn't ready for this.
No, it's fine. Yeah. It's just like what did you watch? Is there a highlight? Is there a play? Is there something that you saw?
Yeah. So by far my favorite thing what happened this week was actually the Cavs hitting the 25-3s in that game. Like we're going to talk about this a lot more later in the episode, but like the threes that are raining in this season have just been absolutely absurd. The record has been broken or tied three times so far in 2017, and like it's just not stopping. So, shout out to the Cavs. Like, it was an insane night, but like you can't be comfortable with that record as it stands.
No,
because the Rockets are coming for you, right?
but yeah, that's absolutely absurd. Like, how it's just the offensive schemes have changed so much over the last couple of years. Damn it, Steph Curry, you changed everything.
Changed it. And yet we still have a resurgence of big men. It's an awkward era in the NBA, but it's some really exciting stuff.
Welcome to the awkward era. Well, I think I'm going to keep that idea surfacing throughout the rest of the season, because the awkward era definitely emerges, where especially with these teams that like you think should tank, but they're actually going to try and win. It's like the Wolves not really that far out of the playoffs, but
determined to make the playoffs.
What? Yeah. All right, but I think my favorite thing has to be this comment from Lou Williams. And Lou Williams says about playing for the Rockets, "I smile more and I feel better." Just like, that is hilarious. That is absolutely hilarious. Just because of, I just imagine how painful. Oh God, LA has just been painful this year.
Yeah, but now he walks into the locker room and Houston is like Happy Days playing in the back. like a different swagger to him.
No problem whatsoever. Yeah. But I imagine, I mean, as a player, you have to feel great about going to a contender.
Yeah.
And it's just like, regardless of where you, like, if you're a starter, if you're on the bench, I don't think it matters. Like, if you're in the atmosphere of a team in a winning mode, like, it has to change the energy.
Oh, yeah, it must. And I think part of it is, like, when teams are tanking or doing bad, like the Lakers have been, like, you do that, you make those, like, operational decisions as a basketball team for the team and the organization with very little loyalty and semblance to what it actually means to the players.
Sure.
Whereas winning, not that it's not for the organization or for the benefit of the team,
yeah,
but it's all about the players at that point. And they're the ones that are actually making that happen. They're celebrated in that way.
Yep.
And there's a huge difference in what that actually must feel like as an NBA player. So
it has to be. And just like a team like the Lakers, where you have, you know, there's problems at so many different levels. Problems with the players, problems with coaching, problems with ownership. It's just like, but when you get in that, when you get in those levels of like multiple layers of just disorganization and just chaos, like it's defeating for everybody, and the communication patterns aren't there and everything is out the window.
Oh, yeah.
So All right, enough about that. That'll just drain your energy right yeah, there and there.
I'm tired.
Damn it. Just the Lakers rest here. So, you know what? We're going to go right into it. We have to go right into it. There's no other option. So, we are going to go right into gameplay. So we are going to go All right, so we're gonna go into it as we always do, some gameplay highlights. So we just have a few games this last week. There was some good games this week.
Fun ball.
There wasn't as many good games as especially a few weeks ago that we saw. So let's just go into it right away. So our RTP game of the week was Washington versus Golden State. Washington defeats Golden State.
Yeah, they do.
112-108. This is on 228. But this kind of comes at a cost. Well, not sorry, doesn't come at a cost for Washington. This game comes at a cost for Golden State.
Yeah, they lost much more than the game.
Oh, gosh. So losing KD over hyperextending his knee, he's going to be evaluated, what, 4 weeks?
In 4 weeks, yeah. So that's not a timetable for return. Unfortunately, they actually listed him out indefinitely. So there's a lot of different chatter in the league right now about whether he will be able to make it back before the playoffs. Some people are saying he'll get in a couple games before round one. Some people are saying he might not even make it till into round one, assuming that they think that their current core without KD could make it through the path or past the first round. It might be more prudent to sit him for those 4 to 7 games. But I mean, no matter at which way you spin it, this is bad news for the Warriors.
It's not good. But I mean, it's just like they have such an incredible team, though, that it's like they can still win. But it's like you lost a very critical portion of it.
Oh yeah,
like the. I would argue the most critical player on their team.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that, but
okay.
But I think that there's a point to be made, right? Like Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond, like they can run the offense, and to an extent, Draymond has shown that he can be a ridiculous force on defense. But at the same time, they've been really leaning on Kevin Durant this entire season to be their interior defender, mm-hmm. even above Zaza or JaVale McGee. Like he has a career high in blocks this season. He's been absolutely killing it, and now you look vulnerable on the defensive end, and your offensive efficiency goes down. Like Kevin Durant is a very, very special player, and any team that loses him is going to see that hit.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of how easy Golden State has made it look without Kevin Durant in the last few years, it took them 60 games or 40 games or however many games it did to get there to really have him mesh with that team.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't just go back to 2015, 2016, or 2014, 2015 Warriors when he steps out. It's not like, yeah. Oh, yeah, we've done this before. We're good. Yeah. Like, no, you're a different team this year, and now he's gone from that, and you're going to feel the effects of that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I don't disagree with that whatsoever. It's good, though, that the much of the core that remains even after Durant steps out is – they're highly in tune with one another. So
yeah.
It's like they're not going to stop winning, but it will change the dynamic of how they play.
Yep.
So talk a little bit about the stats from this game.
The Splash Brothers, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, managed to go 5 of 22 from three. Steph has been, he had three games this week where he shot 12% from three. He's I don't know if he's lost his swagger since the All-Star break or... You know, I mean, obviously everybody goes through cold streaks. It's just not something we're used to seeing with Steph Curry. So I'd keep an eye on that. They've been slacking a little bit. On the winning side, Wall had 19 assists. And
that's
yeah,
stupid.
Dude, he's been going 12 points and 19 assists. And the team had 29 assists. He's just an insane amount of the distribution. And to back that up, in this game, the Wizards had 6 players with 12 or more points. And their highest player on their way to 112, Bradley Beal, only had 25 points. So the distribution on the team is really awesome.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's very contingent on one player and John Wall, but
sure.
Nobody can stop him in creating offense for that team. They've been awesome.
But to be fair, I think every NBA team is contingent at least upon one player. Like somebody is driving the offense. There's a player at the center. I think with the distribution, it makes them pretty deadly in the East, especially with Washington. So having that distribution, not relying too terribly much especially after you get past Wall and Beal.
Yeah, and I think that you are a little safer in today's NBA, given things like a grade 2 MCL sprain in game 65 in season or whatever. When you're more reliant on one player passing and distributing the ball through your offense, mm-hmm. then you are relying on a similar player to do the actual scoring, right? Because it's easier to remove one guy from scoring the basketball. It's really harder, in my opinion, it's much harder to remove one guy from finding open guys in the court and making plays.
Yeah. They're that distribution network that changes everything. So it's you take Harden out of the offense in Houston. Houston, where are you? So, right. Okay, let's move on. Moving on to a few other games. OKC defeated the Jazz 109-106. This is on 228. Westbrook continues to go off. These numbers are stupid.
They are stupid.
43, 11, and 10.
You shouldn't be able to do that. Should be rules against that.
So there's a stat in this game that the Thunder made their first 12 3-point attempts.
Yeah. Yeah, they went 12 of 13 in the first half, 12 of 12 in the first, I think it was 20 minutes or so of the game. There's absolutely right. So credit to the Jazz. They overcame a lot. I think they were down 14 in the second half at one point.
Yeah.
Managed to take the lead by one with a few minutes left to go. And then Westbrook just did as Westbrook does. I counted the numbers here. There was an 8-minute and 25-second period in the fourth where the Thunder retook the lead, scored 14 points, all of which were scored by Mr. Russell Westbrook. So Jeremy Grant managed to get a couple of free throws late in that game to break him scoring basically all of the Thunder's points in the fourth quarter. But it's just stupid.
It's stupid. It's. But who's your favorite person kind of taking over in the fourth? Is it? Would it be Westbrook or do you still defer to Isaiah Thomas?
I think it's Westbrook, man. I love what Isaiah Thomas does, but at the same time, like I've seen Russell Westbrook do it with this chip on his shoulder and this determination and this motivation that is just unmatched in my opinion. Like the man is just ferocious in a way that we haven't seen in a basketball player in at least a decade and a half. I don't know. He's just an absolute machine in a way that I haven't seen in a long time. And he turns it on, and you know when it's coming. And you know, especially when it happens in OKC, even the crowd gets going. Yeah. You know exactly what's going to happen and what they're going to do. And he's going to ISO, and he's going to end up getting an and one on you.
Yeah.
And it happens so consistently and so regularly that it's almost casual. Again, these 43, 11, 10 nights, and it's amazing to see. I absolutely love watching him in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I'm going to make a little bit of a controversial call, and I'm going to say that Westbrook could play back in the day. Like he could play with Jordan. He could play in a different era and still be. I don't know if he could be this good, but he could still be Hall of Fame caliber.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I think that a lot of the argument that most modern NBA players couldn't is based on, you know, hand checking, the fact that, you know, you're not going to get a lot of those friendly calls from the refs. There's not as much of like a personal accomplishment in terms of like the motivation and getting stats and that kind of personal recognition as opposed to the team success. But I mean, if you look at Westbrook playing, the pace that he plays at, he's running up and down the court, is way higher than most NBA players do. And I think that would actually lend itself to an older NBA game where you have guys, you know, running up, chucking up shots, grabbing the rebound and passing the ball back up and rinse and repeat, as opposed to these set plays and all of the things that a lot of the modern NBA teams do. And I could absolutely see Westbrook being successful in that kind of environment.
Sure. All right, let's continue on. We have two more games for our games of the week. I didn't have a chance to check this one out, but this is Boston versus Cleveland, 103-99. Did you watch this game?
Yeah, it was a good game. It was a good back and forth. It was Deron Williams' first game in a Cavs uniform, which was exciting to see, and you know, just a good Eastern Conference matchup. There were a couple plays. This game got real intense at the end. So first of all, LeBron with the triple-double. Always deserves recognition. Get 28, 13, and 10.
Wow!
In a losing effort, the Celtics managed to win 103-99 in this one. Avery Bradley had some absolutely killer lockdown defense on Kyrie Irving late in the game.
Bradley's defense is crazy.
It is.
I love watching him, and it's like he can stand up against some of the best players in the league.
Yeah,
in my opinion,
it's great to see him on the court. And Kyrie was really trying to put the moves on him late in the game. And was going and ended up with a contested fadeaway, which still only went back rim, but he defended it as well as anybody could be expected to do that.
Sure.
Quick shout out. So what I did want to focus on in this game was, so like I said, it's Darren Williams' first game in a Cavs uniform.
Mm-hmm.
They were tied 99-99. Darren Williams manages to foul Isaiah Thomas on a jump shot from behind. and give free throws to go down 101-99, and then on the ensuing possession, LeBron defers to Darren Williams in the corner after getting basically triple teamed on a three pointer, finds the open Darren Williams in the corner, who then bricks what would have been the game winning threes as a Cavalier, and is not making his best first impression.
I'm looking at the box here for the Cavs, and it's actually kind of funny because it's like, oh, here's the starters list. Channing Frye with 3 points. Thompson with 9 points. Yep. Shumpert with 2 points. And it's just like, huh? What's really happening here? Boy, Thompson has been on the skids recently.
Yeah, I think they're missing Kevin Love more than most people would let on, right?
Like,
you have your second best rebounder on that team right now is LeBron James by far. Like right now, there's very little in that offense. Like there's very little scoring talents in anywhere on that roster right now. Obviously, you have Kyrie and LeBron and Channing Frye can make a three when you need him to, and Tristan Thompson can eat lobs. But there's not a whole lot there in terms of just, you know, getting shit done.
Yeah,
and I think that's why you go and you add Darren Williams and Andrew Bogut, who at least can score when they're in the right place at the right time. But Kevin Love, you know, whether most people want to admit it or not, is a good post player, and he is a good 3-point shooter, and he can create for himself, and he can get hotter than most players can on the team. Not to mention, he is a force on the boards, and I think that people are kind of acting these last couple of weeks like Cleveland is at full strength right now.
No,
and
no,
they're absolutely not.
No way. Yeah, but it's just stupid looking at this bench. I mean, Williams, Frye, Jefferson, Liggins, like, oh my god, Bogut is on the bench. Like, this bench is as good as, like, I think it's better
than the Mavericks.
It's good as the Mavericks. It's probably better than Brooklyn. I'm just shocked. All right, so our last game, let's talk a little bit more about Cleveland. Cleveland ended up defeating Atlanta 135-130. This is from 3-3. Both Kyrie and LeBron were back for this game. Kyrie went off with like 43 points in this. LeBron had 38. This is where the record was actually set. They were 25 from 46 from three.
It's nasty.
But I checked this out. There were actually 35 total three-pointers made in this game. And there was 72 attempts. Oh. 72 attempts. I'm like, how long until we see the 100 mark? How long until we absolutely, like, it can't be that far away.
No, I don't think it is.
Yeah, continuing on that Thompson train, he was like 31 minutes and 4 points. You need him to score more than that. Like, I get his rebounding capabilities, but man, he's got to step up and score at least score like 8 to 10.
Yeah,
because at four you're not proving your value.
No, you're not. But the Cavs almost, I mean, you kind of effectively remove him from the offense when you're attempting 46 threes in a game. Like, I wonder how many chances he would have actually gotten and how many of those were essentially just deferred to, well, I'm going to take a three because we're really hot right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Fair enough. I'll tell you something, though. Tim Hardaway Jr.'s stock continues to rise. So he had 36 points, like two boards, two assists. Like, weird stat line, but... But anyways, 36 points off the bench.
Yeah.
It's continuing to prove his value. What do you see as happening with the Hawks kind of continuing on in this season, though?
In this season? I don't see them. I mean, it's the East, right?
Like, yeah.
They're fifth best in the East on a good day. Like, I like the team they put together. I think that they managed to be the home that Dwight Howard was looking for, as unlikely as that seemed, you know, this offseason last year, however. No, you wouldn't have expected that he would have had, you know, this kind of mini resurgence in Atlanta, and I love that. I'm a big fan of Paul Millsap. I've been on record gushing over Tim Hardaway Jr. I think he's absolutely busting out this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Schroeder's having a better season this year too. So they've got a lot of pieces that they're kind of building a solid core around, and they're being a successful team in the East. But they lack that star power that kind of is required of you to be able to be successful in the postseason. Like every team above them in the East right now has like bona fide all stars. And guys that, you know, love to put on a show and love to really, you know, step up in those big moments. And
yeah,
not to take away from Paul Millsap, I know the man was an all-star this year, but he doesn't have that kind of persona or that you know, shine to him. I think that, you know, Dwight Howard obviously used to be that guy. He's nowhere near that anymore. And so, like, they've got good players. I love Coach Bud. I love the team that they put together. I think it's an awesome team culture.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just lacking that, like, that it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think what's interesting though with the East this year is like they're gonna end up in either that 5 or 6 spot. Mm-hmm. The East is so shaky as you get to the bottom that I just don't think that anyone else is gonna move. I mean, I think that people may move up on the bottom. I definitely think that Miami has a shot at number 8, but like Chicago and Indiana. Like, I don't know. I am not gambling on them to rise much further. Like to stay stable, but I don't think that Milwaukee actually has it either. After the injuries.
Yeah.
But anyways, we'll continue on with our highs and lows for this week. So where do we begin? I think, you know, we've already talked about this now a couple of times, but obviously the Cavs setting the record is just a great moment, and it's a great moment, and it's a challenge. It's a challenge to the Rockets. The Rockets, you have 1 week on the clock.
You're up. Step up to the plate.
All right. There's also a really funny story from this last week. This is a shout out to Dan from NBA Thursday. how he knew this and why this is tracked, I get that the NBA tracks everything, but this is like, this to me did not make sense. But the Bulls, the Bulls have just a league leading 18 straight regular season Thursday night home games on TNT. Like this is like betting against the Trailblazers, like I did earlier in the season. It's like they never lose the opener.
Right.
They never lose. They're going to lose a ton of games afterwards, but
not a playoff team.
They take their opener very seriously. So the Bulls, for some reason, take it very seriously. A lot of people had to lose a crazy amount of money in Vegas on that kind of stat. So I don't know who's betting that stat.
Somebody's gonna start to, I bet, this, when they're going for 19. I don't know. Yeah, shout out to Dan. It was a fun game to track just because knowing that record is a thing. And yeah, I had to double check it afterwards. I had to fact check him, but he was right on.
All right, so take me at the last big stat. This is from the T-Wolves. What do we have here?
My boy Ricky Rubio with a triple-double last night against San Antonio in San Antonio. Unfortunately, the Timberwolves lost. However, this was the league's 79th triple-double. Thank you, Russell Westbrook and James Harden, for the most part. The reason this is important is because 79 breaks the record for any other season in history, including the year that Oscar Robertson averaged a triple-double. So,
and there are some more games to go. 20-some
games left to go in the season. Let's see if we can get 100.
Oh, I think we can. I think we can. It's
absolutely
possible. I think Westbrook will take it on his back, and we'll get over the finish line. So continue to go from here. Well, talking about points, Westbrook stays in the conversation. 44.3 points in the last 4 games.
That's nasty.
Scored over 40 in all those games. That is stupid. It's stupid. It's not like this is low caliber ball. Your play. You're playing against some of the best competitors in the league and still scoring 40.
Yeah, all four games were a double-double. I believe two of them were triple-doubles, and unfortunately the Thunder only went 2-2 in that span. So.
Okay.
You're the only one doing out there doing any of the work.
What happened on the Dimes front?
John Wall got 12.5 assists in four games. It's pretty good. Pretty good.
He continues, and you know, 19 assists is gonna keep your average kind of high.
So. It'll help that. A couple other interesting stats: Towns with 18 rebounds and in three games, including 22 rebounds against the Rockets. he's been an absolute monster on the offensive glass. So shout out to him for that. It's been a treat to see. He's really really coming out and has been really aggressive in getting rebounds. Yeah. So. It's been great to see. And Jokic with his third triple-double this month, the first three of his career.
What?
Got it against the Bulls on 228.
Good.
one interesting point about that, he now has more career triple-doubles than Marc Gasol, who only has two in his career. So obviously not to make the hottest takes in terms of who's better at this point.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It is interesting that we have big men that are really coming up, and these young guys, and they're a little more dynamic and versatile than even some of the best big guys in the last couple of years. So,
but it's like but the classic big guys just don't have the dimes, you know. Mm-hmm. So I mean it's not a small feat to get a triple double.
No,
to begin with, and it's like it's like. If you're not going to get it on assists, what are you going to get? Like, you're not going to get it on blocks. You're not, big guy's not going to get it on steals. Like, no one's going to get it on steals. So it's just like, it's tough. But yeah, I think it's a bit too premature to kind of do a comparison, but certainly a great career mark for Jurek at this point. So, okay. As we always do. Let's go to the old man's lounge.
Oh man.
One more time. Oh man. Firepower's taking a hold on me. I need a wonder. Oh man. Ah. So there are some ugly numbers in here. I think we got to do it. We got to start out with our boy from Minnesota here, Brandon Rush.
This is Brandon Rush's second induction in the last 10 days into the old man's lounge.
He comes to visit us, 33 minutes, 0 points,
yeah.
Five boards. You know, he did play. He did play. He's not registering zeros across the list. So, hey, there's a couple of names on here that don't normally come in to visit us.
No.
So. Damari Carroll, this is kind of surprising. So 30 minutes, 0 points. What happened?
I mean, I'm not the best person.
No, that's fine. But we're asking you.
Yeah.
Damari Carroll,
is
everything okay? Is everything like, we're happy to give you gift certificates to the Old Man's Lounge, but like, we don't want to see you in here that often.
Yeah. Yeah. We love visitors, but. Don't do it at any expense to yourself.
Welcome, Brandon Ingram. I'm sure that your Instagram feed will have plenty of posts from the Old Man's Lounge, but this is not where you want to post from, because 26 minutes and 0 points is not where you belong. You're trash anyways, so I don't really care. I don't really care. We'll put you in the back corner in the Old Man's Lounge. All right, other notables.
A couple other brand names in there: Hollis Thompson, Matthew Dellavedova, Kosta Kufos, Chandler Parsons, all got on the Old Man's Lounge with over 20 minutes played. John Lauer with 20 minutes, and one notable thing: he went 0-for-8 in this game. So the most field goal attempts of any Old Man's entrant this week, and the second lowest plus minus with a minus 20 in 20 minutes. So. Maybe work on your basketball skills a little bit, man. Maybe polish off some stuff a little bit. See if you can pick yourself up.
Go to the open gym just a little bit. Oh man, this is tremendous. You know what? You really don't want to join us in the Omaha's Lounge, because all we're gonna do is criticize you. So put up some points and get on our awesome moments that we can stand. All right. All right, so there's oh, there is kind of a nasty stat that fits in with our terrible moments for this week, and that's Curry going off for his career worst 0-11 beyond the three against Philly. So, but it's just like, oh, he's going to go 0-11, and then he's going to make his next 15 and set like an NBA record or something.
That
it's
was
just,
that was the hope. But then actually the game immediately after that was the game against the Wizards in Washington. He and Clay went 5-for-22. So this is part of, I guess, what kicked off that really cold streak for him. So
that it's cold, but you can't count him out. Every time you do that, you start to lose games.
Yeah, and you don't bet against the Golden State Warriors.
You either lose games or you lose money by betting on it. All right, so let's turn our attention over to a couple of the insane plays from this last week. So these are five of our favorite plays from the last week. So we got to go right into it. Blake Griffin has a nasty dunk over Robin Lopez. This was from 3-4, the Clips versus Chicago. Jesus. It's just, that guy can continue to jump, and it's like, I've seen it before, but every single time I'm just like a moth attracted to the flame. He just does it every single time. John Wall over Sean Livingston, I presume. Dumb.
He's a guy that you know is athletic, but has so much finesse to his game that when things like this happen, it's surprising. Ridiculous drive right, and then managed to dunk with his left hand on the right side of the basket over Sean Livingston and JaVale McGee. Just absolutely going for it.
I think
good effort. It was a great play.
I'm gonna give awards some extra bonus points for anybody dunking over Sean Livingston and also JaVale McGee. Yeah. Just because like those dudes are super tall.
Yeah.
Super, super tall. So like getting up over them, great, great thing. All right. So I don't know what it is about this season, but some way, somehow, like the NBA players think they're all NFL quarterbacks, and Taj Gibson throws like a three-quarter shot and drains it to, I think it was to close the half.
Close the half, yeah. Yeah, it was awesome.
He just quickly intercepted it and like threw it right back up. It goes in, and you're like, everybody's going nuts, and it's just like, what just happened? Because we watched it live, and like people were double taking, and we're like, huh?
Yeah,
that actually happened. All right, what happened on this next one?
Yeah, Thunder were up either 1 or 2 at the time over the Pelicans. I don't quite remember, but just Westbrook doing, as we discussed, what Westbrook does. He drove and he had a nasty dunk over DeMarcus Cousins with only a couple minutes left in the fourth quarter. And this it was actually an and one play that fouled DMC out of the game. So contextually, probably the hugest play on this list, other than maybe the next one we got coming up. But just absolutely nasty. DeMarcus Cousins, not the kind of guy that you generally see on the receiving end of such abuse. But it happened, and it obviously paid off for Westbrook. So yeah, great play.
This last play is just stupid. Like, it's stupid, and you have to watch it. All of these plays we're going to post up on our Twitter feed, Ryden_ThePine on Twitter. DeMar DeRozan just goes off, and he goes off over Rose. He does this nasty crossover to close out this game in a game winner. This potentially with the maneuvers that he has, it might make my top 10 plays this season.
Wow. That good, huh?
The crossover sealed it for me. It was just, but it's against Rose. You're not playing against a slacker here. Oh, yeah. feel free to leave your comments on Twitter on that last one. But like, it's still Rose. You're still playing against Rose, and it was hot. It was highly contested.
Yeah.
So it's like he wasn't just gonna roll through him on this. But man, nasty shot. Just steps back, throws down like Kyrie. I still in this scenario though, I still want to give it to, I'm still going like Kyrie over DeRozan for sure.
I think so. And a mid-range pull-up clutch situation.
I guess if we're considering that mid-range, I still give it to DeRozan, but if we're going beyond the arc, I give it to Kyrie over DeRozan.
I Yeah, I agree with that. And I think if we're going inside of mid-range, I'll give it to a number of other people. I'd be
listening to, but, fair enough, but we don't have time for all of that.
Yeah.
So we're going to go to From the Pine this week. So I don't know. We don't even have a scenario for what a two-person is. We do. We're gonna bust it out. We're going with the give and go.
We're on the give and go.
Let's give it and go. So we have to start this week with just old balls everywhere, moving around to all these different teams. So we have DeRon, we have Bogut, we have Jennings. Jeez, I don't even want to mention this guy's name, but I will. We have Matt Barnes. Like, people are moving around, kind of stabilizing some of these other teams. What's your take on what's actually transpired over the last week here?
It's kind of a weird situation, and I had a good talk with Guy about this whole thing. He's not a big fan over the fact that you have these players being waived by teams that know they're tanking, and so basically they have these veteran players, and we don't want you anymore. You're contributing too many wins, right? We want the high lottery pick. We're paying you too much money. We're going to pay you less money to not be on the team. And then you have the Cavs and the Warriors and these other teams that are trying to be contenders that maybe have a missing veteran presence or an open spot in their roster, and they'll take these Deron Williams or Matt Barnes and say, like, yeah, like, come on our team. And so, like, it's this weird shuffling of a veteran, relatively talented or relatively good basketball talent from these bad teams, seemingly only to the you know, top two or three contenders in the league.
Yeah.
And it all just happens kind of at once, you know. It happens after the trade deadline. It's like the last of the dust settling.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of propels the people that you expect to be at the top even higher, because you have these ring chasers, these people that are trying to salvage one of their last seasons in the NBA, going to these teams. So as I said, yeah, Guy's not a big fan of it. I'm a little on the fence, right? Like, it's a free market situation. Like, the guys are on the market. Every team can try to pick them up, and they're in these teams, these Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers, have something to offer that a lot of other teams aren't able to offer. And so you have Deron Williams going, and it creates this dynamic, which is interesting, in that the teams really kind of solidify themselves and really get ready for a playoff play.
Yeah.
No, but at the same time, it's not a riskless situation. Like we said earlier in the season, like, Deron Williams, you know, got a foul on IT and missed the game-winning three, or potential game-winning three.
Sure.
These guys aren't instant successes on the teams. They still have to do that meshing and that molding. It's not as straightforward as it looks, I think, but it is kind of an interesting thing that happened.
No, it's certainly an interesting dynamic, and I appreciate the free market of all of it. So it's like, well, you know, if you're offering what these players want,
yep,
it's like these players are going to go there, and they're going to go try and chase a ring if they can. But the reality is that where I see it kind of failing the NBA is, like, we're not seeing a lot of scenarios where, like, if, you know, Deron Williams and Bogut and, like, those guys, they're not going to these mid-tier teams to kind of create this tension in the East necessarily. It's just like they're solidifying the top.
Yep.
And I get that. I get that. I mean, that will play into the finals itself, but I would actually like it to play earlier on in, you know, like the second round, especially, like in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, you have your one and two, and it's a complete battle, because, you know, the two has solidified its spot with some good roster moves,
right,
kind of picking up. So, and then it's like, you know, potentially the three and four also running for great talent too, which is like, we definitely haven't seen that if all those players are landing Cleveland and Golden State and whatever.
Yeah. So, but it's kind of an interesting personnel thing, right? Like, you don't have, like, none of these players, Deron Williams, Andrew Bogut, Brandon Jennings, Matt Barnes.
Yep.
None of these guys are guys that a franchise can lean on to really propel them in a specific way. So, like, what I'm saying is that the Celtics, the Raptors, the Wizards, they're not going to, like, they can't add an Andrew Bogut and have that actually propel them in any way. Like, you can't lean on these guys. And they know that, and the players know that, right? Like, Deron Williams isn't at the point in his career where he's really having a gigantic positive force on any given team. Now, what he won't do is he won't fuck up like a rookie, like a Kay Felder or somebody like that would. or at least you hope that he doesn't. But, you know, he's been there before. That's essentially what you're signing him on for.
Sure.
But these guys, they know where they're at in their careers. They don't want to be the guy that's leaned on, and they don't want to have that pressure on themselves to have to try to beat the LeBron James Cavaliers or the Warriors. It's a definitely a case of if you can't beat them, join them. And these guys, like, they're taking a back seat to what these teams already have going on just for the money and for the ring.
You know, I can agree with that they will be taking a back seat, but they're jumping to this. But what's funny then, it's not really a complete free market. And it's really just this market where your underperforming teams are just going to seed your top contenders. Yep. And that cycle just repeats over and over. And it's not until there's larger moves in free agency that you actually get significant change. And I get kind of building out the roster, and I get like these guys chasing a chance, an opportunity, mm-hmm. especially coming from a bad team. But yeah, it's tough to digest sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like you already have this bench, and it's just like, yeah, but when you think about it, given the context of they're not going to make that opportunity. They're not really going to drive the wins. They're just driving the cohesiveness of the team and the actual impact longer into the playoffs. It's like if you can rely on your bench further into the playoffs, you can probably make a better run.
Yep.
So, well, definitely understood.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Just because the way that it feels right now is that there's actually very little repercussions to either the team that's waiving the player or the team that's picking him up. It seems just like a relatively fluid transaction system. And it almost, as an NBA fan seeing it from the outside, it kind of doesn't feel like it should be allowed, right? Like, I don't have like a whole lot of basis for saying it shouldn't be, but it's like you're 60 games into the season, mm-hmm. and you have this guy signed for like $17 million this year, and you can just easily be like, well, no, we don't want you on our team anymore. We'll pay you whatever Darren Williams is getting from the Mavs right now, $15 million or something,
sure.
to not be on the team and open up that roster spot. And the Cavs swoop in and taking on waivers, and all they have to do is pay $900,000 in luxury tax, and they're paying his salary of like $480,000. And like, so it's a very easy decision for these teams to just pick up these guys. Mm-hmm. Whereas you almost feel like there should be some consequences to making such drastic changes to your roster 60 mm-hmm. something games into the season. Like, this is what the off season is for, where you're supposed to establish what your team is and who your guys are before a training camp and get them going and doing it. You shouldn't be going into the season planning on making trades, in my opinion, and you definitely shouldn't be going into the season planning on picking up a grizzled vet off of waiver wires 60 games into the season. Like, that shows a level of unpreparedness that I think like the NBA should maybe be materializing some mechanisms against.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, they're not right now, and that's why you see these things happening with the Warriors and the Cavs. Are you
proposing a veterans tax?
I'm proposing some disincentives for teams from just letting guys go. Like, I know that there's sure. the money aspect of it, but at the same time, like I said, like, you're like, the Mavs are already in off-season mode, right? They're mm-hmm. already making plans yeah. for the 2017-2018 season. And we're not even, I mean, we're barely three quarters past this season. We're, you know, not even close to the draft. So it's just an interesting dynamic. So, what happened with Matt Barnes and Jose Calderon was picked up off of waivers one day for the Golden State Warriors before Matt Barnes had been waived.
Yeah.
And then they waived Jose Calderon like 4 hours later and to sign Matt Barnes. And it's just like obviously, you know, it's Jose Calderon. So like, haha. But at the same time, like, that doesn't feel like it should be legal. Like, where is the Players Association in that? Like, you signed a guy, you immediately voided the contract and went and signed another guy. Like, what? Like, that seems like there should be some issues there in terms of like the sheer volume and frequency of roster changes that you're making. But there's not.
All right, Stat Guy, you gotta break it down. The snack wrap is back.
We got
this week.
Snack wrap. So we're gonna start off. Theme of this week for me, as I kicked off the episode with, was the 3-point record being set off by the Cavs. 25, as we mentioned a couple times, absolutely amazing thing. So I decided to do some research as to the frequency of 20 plus 3-point games in the history of the NBA and came up with some interesting stuff.
Okay.
So through the end of the 2015-2016 regular season, there were 24 games in which one player or in which one team had 20 or more three-pointers.
Sure.
So chew on this. Out of those 24 instances, it was only 17 different teams that actually did it.
Okay.
Right. Out of those 17 teams, 13 of them went to the postseason that year.
Whoa. Okay. All right.
Out of those 13 teams, only three of them made it to the finals.
Okay.
And out of those three teams that made it to the finals, zero won a championship.
That's the best funnel I've ever seen. It stops. It stops hard. Like I was just waiting for that magical stat that you had there. One team ended up winning the finals. No, none of them have won the finals. So
no team that has ever shot 20 or made 20 or more three-pointers in a regular season game has gone on to win the championship, and only three out of the 17 that have done it have even made it to the finals.
Crazy.
Whoa! Oh, man. Rambling gambler here. Rambling gambler.
All right, so for my rambling gambler bit this week, I need to talk a little bit of just about unrealistic stats. Unrealistic stats, because you got me thinking about this. Obviously, with the number of three-pointers attempted, first off, I think it's going to get... I think someone is going to beat it again this season.
This season? Wow.
I think they're going to go for it.
I hope you're right.
Teams are making a push. So I'm going to go... One team goes over... goes 25, at least ties it, if not exceeds it. But I'm also, because I've been seeing just stupid numbers, I'm gonna set some crazy numbers that I don't think I've seen before, but I'm just gonna try and roll with it. So let's go with, has anybody had a 60-point game this season?
No.
Okay, I'm gonna say one 60-point game this season from somebody. I have no idea. we'll keep this on the record. I am going to say 30 rebounds. Somebody has 30 rebounds this season.
30 rebounds.
I'm going stupid just because of the numbers that I've seen. You know, after seeing 19 dimes, I'm going to go 25 dimes. Someone has a 25 dime night. I think that's enough insanity for one.
Turnovers?
I think 12.
James Harden hit 12 earlier this season.
Okay. Let's go 14.
14.
All right. And so steals doesn't move too much. Steals doesn't move that much. What is the best steal number this season?
Draymond Green and his triple-double.
Okay. I don't think that is going to be tied again. That's a really tough number.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
And then leading this season in blocks so far, Brooke Lopez with 8, tied with a certain Robin Lopez with 8.
Okay, let's go 10. Let's go 10.
10 blocks.
10 blocks.
Oh boy.
We're going. I'm going big. I'm going big here. Episode 27. Major call outs. I'm gonna see if these are gonna happen. This is at least gonna spark some excellent gambling for the rest of the season. So this is Honda with the rambling gambler. All right. You know what? We got to move on to a little bit of this week in basketball. So. Players of the week this week. Are these locked players of the week this week?
No, these are guys that I would be very surprised to not win players of the week. Players of the week are generally announced on Mondays or Tuesdays, so we don't have that information.
Ah, yet. Fair enough. Yeah. Now, the more you know. Okay, so you're saying obviously LeBron. LeBron is like, wasn't he the player of the month last month?
Yeah. And he's shooting over 50% from three in his last 10 games. Ugh. Yeah, he's absolutely turning it on in a way that you don't even see LeBron turn it on is the way that he's been playing.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. I think he has to be a lock again. And then, it would be stupid not to consider Westbrook, at least in consideration. He's like like semi-permanently in consideration. It's like, has Westbrook really played that much? It doesn't matter. Just keep him in consideration.
Right, exactly. Like when you say like, oh, who should win player of the week this week or player of the month, the first thing anybody does is like, well, what did Westbrook do this week? Oh, 44 points in four games? Yeah, okay.
Can I just go to one stat from Westbrook that just continues to blow my mind? Yep. And that's the fact that he's got more triple-doubles this season than Jordan had in his career, I believe.
That's wild. That's
so it was nuts. Like 31 to 30 or something like that. So my head just I had to get off my computer and just go for a walk because yeah. I couldn't digest that.
That's
right away.
Enough triple double yeah. for the day.
All right, let's talk about a few injuries that happened this over the last couple weeks here. So it looks like Noah is out for the rest of the season. Embiid is also out.
Yep, that's a big one.
Man, that's a shame. That really is a shame. And it's just like you want, especially with what he's done for basketball, you want him to continue to make it. But man, that just sucks.
It does. It does. And he's people have been kind of drawing the Odin comparisons lately. And for me, this is so much worse because Odin, there were issues with like whether he literally wanted to be playing basketball. Like, yeah. There were people saying like there were alternative professions he was looking into. Embiid is like he is there and he is the guy and he wants to be out there and that shows when he's playing and it shows even when he's not playing. Right, like he's very outspoken and he became the face of that franchise before he ever stepped onto the court and then he backed up everything that he was doing and saying off the court as soon as he stepped on it and started producing in the way that he was.
Yep.
And to see him go down like this, it's just it's frustrating to see as an NBA fan. And I'm sorry to all the Sixers fans that are listening, but it's brutal. It is brutal.
Yeah. You don't like to see it. As an NBA fan, as an overall NBA fan, I don't like to see any players go down, especially ones that fully embrace the culture, really give back to their fans. And that's what you saw Embiid doing. You saw Embiid stepping into the culture of Philly and just really this season, really showing like what he could do. And it was just, I'm disappointed. I'm definitely disappointed. And Durant going down, it's not good.
No,
it's just, it's not good for the league and it's not good for him. And it, like, there's no winning situation here because it was like you'd rather have the Spurs or you'd rather have the Clips or like whoever's going to face them in the West. You'd rather have them take on Golden State at their best to say they beat them at their best and not as a result of somebody being out.
Who's your Western Conference champion right now? Spurs right now are two games behind the Warriors with 21 games left.
Yeah, they play pretty soon.
They play three times in those 21 games.
Yeah.
I think two of them are in San Antonio.
Oh. Who is my Western Conference champion? I mean, gosh. I think I still have to go Golden State, but it's tough because it's that fact about betting on the Spurs. They just sit there in two. You don't really worry about them, and then all of a sudden they'll go off on you,
yeah.
and really make a run at it. But who's yours?
Are
you going with Golden State, or are you rocking somebody else?
So there's undoubtedly some recency bias in this since I watched the Timberwolves game last night. But the Spurs are nasty right now. They're so good, and Kawhi Leonard is like he's becoming exciting to watch. He's, you know, that like that exciting fundamental player.
Yeah,
his defense is absolutely off the charts. it's to the point where he's kind of that playmaker on defense that you don't see out of a lot of players, and when you do, and especially when he does it, it's absolutely special.
Yeah,
he got six steals against the team last night, and Wiggins, who had 19 straight 20 plus point games, he just absolutely hounded him and frustrated the shit out of him, and just like, it's a different level of player than we see from a lot of guys, and he's clutch on offense. He's a skilled shooter. He's a skilled finisher, and he just creates so much for that team.
Yeah.
The supporting cast, it's not where Golden State is. I fully admit that, but just the skill of Popovich and the rotations that they play and the determination of those guys, like he's so consistent and fundamental that I can see if the Warriors get shook a little bit. Like, we've seen this before. They're like 3-1 in the finals, right? They got shook. And that was the first time we had seen it all year. But when it happened, they couldn't recover from it. And I worry a little bit that with that same cast, Kevin Durant is going to be that shakeup. Kevin Durant going down is going to be that shakeup that they don't recover from as much as people are expecting them to. And the Spurs are that team that will just absolutely take advantage of any vulnerability that you show as a team.
So let's talk about one thing for 1 second here. The in terms of having Kawhi lead your organization versus having Curry.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, recently we've seen some fluctuation in Curry's game.
Yep.
But we've seen a pretty consistent Kawhi all season.
Oh yeah.
So. Yeah, it's definitely tough, and I definitely think that they can get shaken up. It's just when they decide to crank the knob and turn it back up, they just beat everyone.
Yeah.
They beat everyone into oblivion. So I don't know how to bet on that. So but obviously the Spurs are a contender. This is where I need a few more weeks to digest exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, my motto through the last season's finals was don't bet against the Warriors. It's bad business.
But yeah,
I can't stand by that anymore in this season. I don't know. I can very easily see things getting shaken up in the Western Conference.
All right. Okay, there's so much to think about.
Yeah, we're not going to resolve that one right now.
That's going to fill up entire episodes as we move along here. Episode 28 is just Hondo just pondering exactly what's going to happen in the Western Conference playoffs. That's it. A little bit lighter news. So the Big Three logos have been announced this last week. Some crazy names. I saw a ghost theme.
The Ghost Ballers?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They're glorious. Yeah, purple and white, just the freshest logo and the freshest color combos coming out. My personal favorites are the Ghost Ballers and the Three-Headed Monsters, which is Jason Williams' teams. Yeah, check them out. We'll post them up on the Twitter feed. Make sure you get a good look at them.
The trilogy.
Every one of them. There's been some clear work put in, and they're all very stylized, and it's the materialization of what we want to be seeing in the Big Three is like this professional yet just total fucking nonsense on a basketball court. And that's what you see in the Ghost Ballers. I can't keep it straight.
Ghost Ballers is hilarious. The trilogy looks like a really bad horror movie with Kenyon Martin, starring Kenyon Martin and Al Harrington. The Killer Threes is, it looks like a wasp removal service with Chauncey Billups and Steven Jackson. Three-Headed Monsters is like a kid's, monster movie. It just Richard Lewis, Jason Williams. Tri-State, honest to God, looks like a tire protectant. So we'll definitely throw these up on the Twitter feed. Okay, beyond this, this story coming out of Philly is pretty funny. Evil Genius Beer from Philly is now brewing a Trust the Process IPA. How did it take so long for somebody to get on this?
Oh, I don't know.
I feel like there was a monster opportunity earlier in the season. So
yeah. You branded a player or a team, and then a specific player, and it's the most hyped player in Philadelphia right now, outside of maybe Carson Wentz. And it's you know, kind of a phrase that the entire city has latched onto. And I don't understand how you don't plaster this phrase over everything Philadelphia have.
Evil Genius Beer. That's also just a great name.
Yeah.
All right. So. This next week in ball, so our RTP game of the week is the Warriors versus the Spurs. This is on 3/11. So we also have some other games of note. Rockets versus the Spurs on 3/6. Boston versus Golden State on 3/8. The Spurs versus the Thunder on 3/9. I like that Spurs-Thunder because that's a bit of a rivalry, which is quite enjoyable.
Yeah.
Some of the worst games in the public service announcement for this week. Lakers play the Mavs on 3/7. Stay away from that one. The Bulls and Magic, not going to bring you much entertainment on 3/8. And the Nets versus the Mavs, it is best to change the channel. That is a horrible game and probably one of the nominees for worst game of the year. My obscure game of the week, I don't know how obscure it is, but I'm going with this. This is from the KBL, the Korean Basketball League.
Of course.
And this is the Busan KT Sonic Boom versus the Changwon LG Sackers. I didn't even know Sackers. I have no idea what I have no idea what that is.
I don't know why you're looking at me.
I have no idea what it is, so that's why I brought it up. All right, so that's going to wrap episode 27. If you're on Twitter, follow us at Ryden underscore the pine and at Guy Dota, at How3, at Vexed Intellects. If you're in the Seattle area, please come join up with us at NBA Thursday. You can find us on meetup.com, NBA Thursday. So, Stat God, who's going to bring us out this week?
Yeah, stepping in for Guy. End quote of the week, Andrew Bogut. We talked about him earlier joining the Cavs this last week. It's flipping over from beautiful sunny San Francisco over to Cleveland. Asked why he did that. Quote, I heard it's beautiful this time of year. Saucy.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
This has been a Bencast Studios production.